Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Yeah, this is live. It is Tuesday night, September 12th. Just kidding. It is Tuesday night, the night of the final scheduled Obama-Clinton debate that's going on right now at Cleveland State University in Cleveland, Ohio. If you want to switch over to MSNBC, I'll understand. That's where it's being broadcast. When you get tired of that, come on back to the program. What happened last night, I live in an area that is, we have so many trees, and we have had a big one. So we've had a drought here for the past 5 or 6 years, which weakens the roots of the trees. And when a windstorm came up like we had last night, once again, in the rain, all hell can break loose, and all hell did break loose. We had an enormous tree. And the irony here is about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, Kathy and I were out behind the house looking at some of these trees that have to come down. And I pointed out, I said, that one is got to come. If it comes down, it's going to take out part of the fence and it may hit the house. Well, guess what? That's exactly what happened. So I spent last night when we got knocked off the air, and then today I had a pretty good time cutting into chunks. I got out there and did the manly thing, or didn't I, Kathy, huh? Got the chainsaw out and cut up enough firewood to last like for six forevers, and every muscle in my neck and shoulders is now hurting. Not that anyone gives a damn, but I just wanted to let you know what happened last night. It was very frustrating. The wind here was just howling, and then about 4 o'clock this morning, the storm hit. We have had the damnedest weather in the South. A bunch of tornadoes over in western Georgia later on today. I guess that was around noon, 1 o'clock. But for the past 24 hours, it's just been weird. I apologize for the interruptions in the program. There's absolutely nothing that we can do about it. It's not a matter of our connections to KPHX. It's not a matter of satellite uplinks. It's not a matter of feeds to the internet. When we have an event like that occur, it just gives me a night off, and I don't like it because we were just ready to rock last night, and then all of a sudden, boom, everything goes. So we're back. It's very calm tonight. There's no wind. There's no rain. There's no tornadoes. There's no global warming. There's no global climate change. The polar bears are okay tonight. The glaciers have stopped retreating. Mike in San Luis Obispo, California, wrote last night when this happened, Mike, some sites are reporting you were knocked off the air in the middle of talking about the Siegelman affair and replaced with repeats of your show. Will you confirm or deny this on your site or your show today? Many of us count on you being the lone sane voice on in a sea of crazies and get concerned when we hear things like this. If you clear it up, it would be great. All right, Mike, I hope we just cleared it up. What I started to say last night, I'm just going to pick it up there because it was important to me. We were talking about the Clinton campaign and the Obama campaign and some of the tactics that are now being used. The race card is being played. I wanted to see how long it would take. I was hoping the race card would not be played. Now, you can make your own decision as to who is playing the race card. When you have a psychopath like Lucianne Goldberg, she was the one that told the woman, the blonde crazy woman, to tape her phone calls with Linda Tripp, to tape her phone calls with Monica Lewinsky all those years ago. Lucianne Goldberg is a real psychopath, and so is her son Jonah. But at her website, somebody sent me a link. There's a picture of tribal Africans, a color photo that I don't know, could have been taken 150 years ago in darkest Africa. And the caption underneath it says 2009 inaugural party. So the race card is being played. Later on, that picture had a caption added to it, 2009 inaugural ball or inaugural party, courtesy of unnamed member of the Clinton staff. Now, you know, I'm not so naive to believe that the Clinton campaign is responsible for everything these right-wing sons of bitches are claiming that the Clinton campaign is responsible for. There are some real sick, devious people that have infested our political system. They are all right wingers, and they will do anything to destroy our system because they are incipient Nazis, and this is what they want. By the same token, this is a mano a mano between two people, either one of whom will make history in this country. I think Hillary Clinton probably feels to a degree that the presidency belongs to her for whatever reason. Maybe it does, but she feels that it does. And I don't think she likes the fact that Barack Obama came out of nowhere. And whether you agree with him or not, you have to respect his campaign tactics. While the Clintons, and I say the Clintons for the obvious reason, operated top-down organizations. And why shouldn't they? The candidacy and the presidency ultimately was hers. So it's a top-down situation. Consequently, when the time came where they needed more donations or more money, there was hardly anyone left to turn to, hence Hillary's $5 million loan to herself. The Obama campaign, by the same, conversely, has been bottom-up. You can read it in Newsweek, read it in Time, read it any place you want. Don't you know, take it as gospel because you hear it here. But the Barack Obama campaign out-organized the Hillary Clinton campaign to a fare thee well. And, there, you know, Saul Alinsky said it a long time ago, organize, organize, organize. If you want something done, if some sort of a social movement, whether it is lower rents or union organizing or an effective presidential campaign, you've got to organize. Now, the screaming, and I've visited some websites today. I've looked at some of the stuff going back and forth. One of my favorites is Democratic Underground. And the Obama supporters and the Clinton supporters on that particular website, and I don't mean to single them out because you can get the same thing at Daily Kos, but the supporters of these two Democratic candidates are just ripping each other to shreds. Now, okay, that's fair enough. It is politics. This is not softball. It's politics. It's a blood sport. It always has been. But it's a shame to see this happen, on the one hand. On the other hand, maybe it's a good thing. Maybe this is what it takes. The Democratic Party needs to be purged. The Rahm Emanuel types have got to be tossed out on their asses. The people who don't want progressive Democrats, the people at the top who don't want progressive Democrats, who in fact want corporate Democrats, who want Democrats who will go along to get along, those people, if the Democratic Party is to regain its soul, need to be removed from their positions of power. In my humble Democratic blue collar coalition building humble opinion. Now, if you have a different opinion, welcome to it. Opinions are like belly buttons; everyone has one, except Adam and Eve. but to see Democrats going after each other like this is really sad. But it's going to get worse because the campaigns are going to tighten up. No less a shining light in the Democratic firmament than Bill Clinton has said, if Hillary does not win Ohio and Texas, it's pretty much over. Other political pundits have looked at the scorecards and have pretty much agreed not only does she have to win, but she has to win by sizable majorities. She has not won by sizable majority delegates in a very long time. Then there's the argument of the superdelegates. There's the argument of Michigan and Florida, two states whose populations were just bitch-slapped by the Democratic leadership, who said, no, your votes aren't going to count because you're jumping out when we don't want you to jump out. Well, the Democratic Party has got to be purged. If Hillary Clinton is the one to do it, then vote her in. If Barack Obama is the one to do it, then vote him in. If neither one of them is the one to do it, then vote someone else in. You understand what I'm saying? It's going to be weird tonight, so stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. It's a dog. 21 past the hour. This was sent to me by somebody, the meaning of Obama's robes. You know, the picture that has been out there about Barack Obama in the white native garb. It says a photo of U.S. presidential candidate Barack Obama wearing Somali clothing is causing a storm after it got released to the Drudge Report website. Yusuf Garad Omar, head of the BBC's Somali service, explains the meaning of the robes. These are the normal clothes that nomadic people wear. The head turban is especially used by elderly people as a suggestion of respect. It is something that has no meaning whatsoever in Somalia culture. If you see someone dressed like that in Somalia, you think it is a nomadic person. That is all. There is no religious significance to it whatsoever. It is mainly the nomadic people who use it. Some of them are religious, some are not. It is simply a tradition of the place where they are from. In this particular place, Wajir, in northeast Kenya, the community is majority ethnic Somali. All these sorts of explanations, you see, have to be made for one simple reason. The United States is an incredibly on fire, burning, racist society. Always has been. If a candidate were to dress in so-called native clothing from Ireland, which would be what? Tweeds and a cap? I don't think anyone would say a thing. And as far as insinuating that Barack Obama is, you know, I'm just getting so fed up with this. Barack Obama has a black father, an African father, that he hasn't seen in how long, Kathy? I don't even know. He has a white American mother. I believe both of his parents are dead, if I'm not mistaken. His mother died at a relatively young age. What if Barack dresses in his mother's side of the family, her tribal clothing every day? In other words, he wears a coat and a tie. This kind of stuff drives me crazy. But this is the natural outgrowth of where we live. This is the United States of America. We are a mind-bogglingly racist society. Always have been. I was interviewed on a program this morning that goes to the so-called urban market. That's code talk for black folk, right? The urban market. Yeah, okay. And the topic of Barack Obama, his candidacy, and Hillary Clinton's candidacy came up. A lot of people who listen to urban talk are split, just like a lot of Democrats are split. You know, do I vote for that candidate or this candidate? Do I consider that this one's a white woman and that one's a black man? Or do I just get past that and vote for the candidate that will best represent the United States and me, and represent me domestically, represent me overseas, will try to undo the damage that this pig in the White House has put on us for 8 years? But invariably, the race thing is happening. One of the things we talked about on the interview this morning is that so many young people are turning out for these Obama rallies. And if that's an indication that there is a huge population cohort in this country that has transcended this racial crap, I mean, what a perfect person to do it with. Barack Obama, who has a white mother and a black father. Wow! There's your gift, America. There's your gift if your only issue is trying to transcend race. Now, obviously, that's not the issue. It shouldn't be an issue when you are considering a candidate to become president of the United States for the next 4 and possibly 8 years. But this is America. This is the United States. So that issue is there. And it's going to be, Barack Obama is going to be hit with it. And I frankly cannot tell when an attack comes from the Clintons or comes from the right wingers. But I do know this, as we said the other night, the Clinton campaign, by the admission of Clinton staffers, has opened some time ago a direct channel to this pig Matt Drudge. So when something designed to embarrass, and then I like the statement made by some of the Clinton supporters. Well, why should a picture of Barack in native clothing embarrass him? And I just want to scream at that person, are you brain dead? Don't you know why that picture was put out there? If you want to show Barack Obama in his native clothing, for Christ's sake, show him in a gray suit, a blue tie and a white shirt, and black shoes. That's his native dress. He's an American, goddammit. So every time I see this, I think to myself, oh, okay, here we go.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
It's about 25 before the hour. Robert Perry, writing at consortiumnews.com, had a question when I saw the headline. It caught my eye. Why the war on Obama? And he points out that, some people still, he calls them cynics, still view Barack Obama's appeal for change to be empty rhetoric. I don't. I think the people who view the call for change to be empty rhetoric are mostly right-wingers or Democrats who have sold their souls to the corporate Satan that controls the Democratic Party. I can't think of a time in recent political history where we haven't needed change more so than we needed now. Change in leadership, change in direction, change in identity of what this country, do we stand for anything anymore? We are a torture nation. Canada, the government of Canada warns its citizens to be careful. If you fall into the evil clutches of the Americans, you might be tortured. Jesus Christ! And what, we don't need change? Of course we need change. And when Barack Obama talks about it and people say, oh, well, what does that mean? Sitting around singing Kumbaya, as this ass in Cincinnati said today? No, that's not what it means. It means what the word says. Change. Everything. But as Robert Perry writes, it's starting to dawn on Washington insiders that Barack Obama's ability to motivate little folk, you know, like us, people who will send him $10 or $20, not corporate America. Oh, I know. Look at his campaign financial reports. You'll find some corporate America in there. Of course you will. That's called covering your own ass or hedging your bet. But Barack Obama got campaign contributions from almost a million small donors. And what does that mean? Uh-oh. That could loosen or shake or end the grip that special interest money, i.e. corporations, have held for so long on the direction of the U.S. government. Corporatism. We've been talking about it for how long? All of a sudden, along comes Barack Obama, and he's just a little bit outside the reach or the control of that sort of corporate interest. So, does that explain the attack on Barack Obama, the war on Obama? As Perry writes, the spreading realization that Obama's political movement might represent more revolutionary change than previously understood is sparking a deepening resistance among defenders of the status quo and prompting harsher attacks on Obama. Obama's grassroots donations have negated Clinton's prodigious fundraising advantage with big donors. Powerful lobbies, Robert Perry writes, from AIPAC to representatives of military and other industries also are recognizing the value of keeping their dominance over campaign cash from getting diluted by Obama's deep reservoir of small donors. It's in their direct interest to dent Obama's momentum and demoralize his rank-and-file supporters as soon as possible. So what you wind up with, the neoconservatives and other ideological movements are now joining with the Clinton campaign to tear down Obama by depicting him as unpatriotic, unvetted, unexperienced, unable to do anything, and maybe a closeted Muslim. The New York Times unleashes this simpering freak, William Crystal. They give him a column, for God's sake. One of the people who lied this country into war, one of the original founders, writers of the Project for New American Century, a century, and the New York Times gives him a column.
Oh, it's only for a year, just a trial period.
So what does Crystal do the other day? He attacks Barack Obama's patriotism, his patriotism, for Christ's sake, by pointing out that Obama decided to stop wearing that irritating, nasty-ass little American flag lapel pin. You know, I wonder if right-wingers wear the damn thing when they go to the bathroom. It's just irritating. It's not the flag, so I'll call it the damn thing. It's a piece of junk, most of which are made in China, for God's sake. But all of a sudden, that's your secret handshake. That's your pass. Oh, you don't have your American flag lapel pin on? Oh, Jesus God, you must be an atheistic, queer-loving, communist hater of America. You support the Muslims, don't you? So Obama said he saw how Bush was exploiting the flag to stampede the nation toward war with Iraq. And he said, when asked about his lack of a flag pin last October, he said, you know, the truth is that right after 9/11, I had a pin. As we're talking about the Iraq War, that became a substitute, I think, for true patriotism, which is speaking out on issues that are of importance to our national security. I decided I won't wear that pin on my chest. So the pig William Crystal, In a column entitled, "It's All About Him." It's all about him. William Crystal mocked this explanation as an example of Barack Obama's dubious claim to patriotism and his pomposity. And Hillary Clinton, on the very same day on CNN, made reference to the Barack Obama campaign by saying, well, it's all about him. Mrs. Clinton, no, it isn't all about him. It's just an outrage, that's all. You know, whether you vote for Barack Obama or not, anyone who refuses to see what this guy is doing with his candidacy, he's waking up young people. How many times have we talked about, you know, this older generation, the baby boom generation? How many times have we talked about how young people just don't give a damn anymore? And why that certainly makes sense. Because they have seen nothing but government policies for the last 28 years that have ruined their families, their parents' families, who have caused them to, instead of paying $8,000 a year for college tuition, now they have to pay $35,000 or $40,000 a year for college tuition. Everything is predatory. They can't get a loan. They can't do this. They can't do that without being body slammed by corporate America. So they checked out. How many young people checked out, said, screw this. This is an old folks game. I'm out of here. Not only have you older people done this to our political system, you've also screwed up the whole planet. So all of a sudden, someone comes along, a political someone, who re-inspires this younger generation. Oh, well, then let's kick his ass. Let's kick his ass. He doesn't have any experience. The attack on Barack Obama. Someone sent this to me. Oh, Bridget sent it to me. It's from Peter Coyote. It's pretty amazing stuff. It says, let's take a closer look at who's really qualified and who's really working for the good of all of us in the Senate, Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. This is right after Senator Clinton had served one full term, 6 years, and another year campaigning. And she had managed to author and pass into law 20 pieces of legislation in her first 6 years. Now, you can find all this at the website of the Library of Congress. It's thomas.loc.gov. But here they are. Here's what the 20 pieces of legislation that Hillary Clinton has managed to author and pass into law. 1. Establish the Kate Mulaney National Historic Site. 2. Support the goals and ideals of Better Hearing and Speech Month. 3. Recognize the Ellis Island Medal of Honor. 4. Named a courthouse after Thurgood Marshall. 5. Named a courthouse after James L. Watson. 6. Named a post office after John O'Shea. 7. Designate August 7, 2003 as National Purple Heart Recognition Day. 8. Support the goals and ideals of National Purple Heart Recognition Day. 9. Honor the life and legacy of Alexander Hamilton on the bicentennial of his death. 10. Congratulate the Syracuse University Orange Men's Lacrosse team on winning the championship. 11. Congratulate the Lemoyne College Dolphins men's lacrosse team on winning the championship. 12. Establish the 225th anniversary of the American Revolution commemorative program. 13. Named a post office after Sergeant Rian Tejeda. 14. Honor Shirley Chisholm for her service to the nation and express condolences on her death. 15. Honor John Downing, Brian Fahey, and Harry Ford, firefighters who lost their lives on duty. There's a couple more. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us.
We're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore.
I think American people, now that they've realized I'm going to seek re-election, expect me to seek re-election.
Jesus. All right, we are taking a quick and admittedly cursory look at Hillary Clinton's record in the Senate after having served one full term, 6 years, and another year campaigning. She managed to author and pass into law 20 pieces of legislation in her first 6 years. Now, the first 15 were fluff. I think we can all agree on that. Only 5 of her bills were more substantive, and here they are. Number 16, extend periods of unemployment assistance to victims of 9/11. 17, pay for city projects in response to 9/11. 18, assist landmine victims in other countries. 19, assist family caregivers in accessing affordable respite care. And 20, designate part of the National Forest System of Puerto Rico as protected in the Wilderness Preservation System. Now, Barack Obama's, and the person who sent this to me says, I would post all of Obama's, but the list is too substantive, so I'll mainly categorize. During the first 8 years of his elected service, and this includes the first 8 years was in the Illinois House and Senate. During the first 8 years of his elected service, he sponsored over 820 bills. He introduced 233 bills regarding health care reform, 125 on poverty and public assistance, 112 crime-fighting bills, 97 economic bills, 60 human rights and anti-discrimination bills, 21 ethics reform bills, 15 gun control bills, 6 Veterans Affairs bills. In his first year in the Senate, in the U.S. Senate, he authored 152 bills and co-sponsored another 427. These included the Coburn Obama Government Transparency Act of 2006. It became law. The Lugar Obama Nuclear Nonproliferation and Conventional Weapons Threat Reduction Act. It became law. The Comprehensive Immigration Reform Act passed the Senate. The 2007 Government Ethics Bill became law. The Protection Against Excessive Executive Compensation Bill is still, I believe, in committee. In all, since entering the U.S. Senate, Senator Obama has written 890 bills and co-sponsored another 1,096. An impressive record for someone who supposedly has no record, according to some who would prefer that this comparison not be made public. He's not just a talker, he's a doer. End of email. Now, you can take that with whatever pounds of salt or grains of sugar you want to take it. But, you know, I've been saying over and over again on the program, check the record. Just take a look at what candidates have done. And to the people who say, well, it doesn't count in the Illinois Senate. Why not? It's an elective office. It has to do with governance. Well, Mike, don't be a jerk. You know, the Illinois Senate doesn't make treaties. Okay. Then just take a look at his first year or two in the United States Senate and compare it to a similar period of time, compared to the whole first term, the whole first 6 years of Senator Clinton's record. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're sitting there, you're cursing at your radio, and you're saying that goddamn Malloy, how could he do this? Hillary Clinton is the most qualified. Hillary Clinton is the one who should be the next president. And here he is backing this Barack Obama. Malloy has drunk the Kool-Aid. Malloy has taken the blue pill. This is awful. This is terrible. I'm never going to listen to him again. Fair enough. I've gotten emails like that over the past couple, 3 weeks. Fair enough. You know, I am one person out of 300 million, and I'm trying my damnedest to understand these candidates, to try to get it straight in my mind who I'm going to vote for. And if the comparisons come up like this, if the attitudes of the campaigns are this different, if operatives within this campaign or that campaign is trying to sabotage the other campaign, not based on ideas, not based on leadership qualities, but based on smut and garbage and crap and working with the right wing, you know, Senator Clinton rightfully talked about how the vast right-wing conspiracy tried to murder her and her husband, politically murder them, destroy them, kill them. They were accused of everything. The pig Jerry Falwell even promoted a video that talked about all the corpses buried in Arkansas, the result of a murder spree by Bill and Hillary, unlike anything since Bonnie and Clyde. She understands. If anybody in this country understands the filth and the sleaze and the sickness that exists in our political system, it's Hillary Clinton. Wouldn't you think, based on that, that Hillary Clinton would make certain that her campaign stayed completely away from this kind of crap, of garbage? And I mean, when I say completely, I mean completely. Totally stay away from it. And immediately just condemn, disavow, like McCain did today with the jerk-ass that introduced him, this non-existent Cincinnati radio right-wing talk show geek who had his moment on the stage in Cincinnati. And by the way, the guy has the worst hair dye job I think I've ever seen on an old man. It was just horrible. But he stands up there. He's supposed to be introducing McCain, and he talks about Barack Hussein Obama. You know, Barack Hussein Obama, over and over. And at least McCain, after he found out about it, apologized, said, I take responsibility. I didn't know that was happening. I'm not going to do that. This campaign's not going to be that way. You got to give him a few points for that, don't you? I don't mean vote for him. He's still insane, but a few points for that. Whereas, in my estimation, just mine, not yours, just mine, the Clinton campaign is doing everything it can, the surrogates, the subordinates in the Clinton campaign, doing everything it can to undermine Barack Obama, not defeat him because the Clinton campaign is better organized or that she's a better candidate, but trying to undermine and defeat him for no reason other than she can't do it the other way. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. I want you to hear something. We're going to do it right here at the top of the hour. There is a candidate for the presidency who represents all the things that the Democratic Party at one time was, can be in the future, should be now, in support of. Single-payer national health insurance, cutting the military budget, saying no to nuclear power and yes to solar energy, crackdown, a hard crackdown on corporate crime and corporate welfare, open up the presidential debates to more than just the candidates selected by the national media, adopt a carbon pollution tax, to try to make a not so desperate effort, but an effort to slow down global warming. There's a question now whether we can reverse it or not. Reverse U.S. policy in the Middle East. Start listening to the Palestinians. Really listening to the Palestinians. Not throwing the Israelis into the Mediterranean, but listening to both sides. Impeach George Bush and Dick Cheney. Repeal the Taft-Hartley anti-union law. Adopt a security speculation tax and levy it against the hedge fund traders and the vampires and the wolves that operate on Wall Street that set up these phony monetary devices that result in people losing their homes, in people being conned into these massively fraudulent, for example, home ownership loans. Put an end to ballot access obstructionism. Make it easier for candidates like the Greens, like the Independents, to get on a ballot. And work to end the fact that corporations are granted the same rights under the Constitution as individuals. Now, doesn't that sound, doesn't that make sense? All right, some of you are way ahead of me. But you know who the candidate is who talks about this. It used to be it was mainstream Democrat. There's nothing that I just read off. That list, there is nothing on that list that 30 years ago, 35 years ago, was not absolutely mainstream, blue-collar, coalition-building, working-class Democrat. Now, do you hear Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama talking about those issues now? No, you do not. But somebody is.
Let me put it in context to make it a little more palatable to people who have closed minds. 24% of the American people are satisfied with the state of the country, according to Gallup. That's about the lowest ranking ever. 61% think both major parties are failing. And according to Frank Lutz's poll, a Republican, 80% will consider voting for an independent this year. Now, you take that framework of people feeling locked out, shut out, marginalized, disrespected, and you go from Iraq to Palestine, Israel, from Enron to Wall Street, from Katrina to the bungling of the Bush administration, to the complicity of the Democrats in not stopping him on the war, stopping him on the tax cuts, getting a decent energy bill through. And you have to ask yourself, as a citizen, should we elaborate the issues that the two are not talking about? And all the candidates, McCain, Obama, and Clinton, are against single-payer health insurance, full Medicare for all. I'm for it, as well as millions of Americans, and 59% of the physicians in a forthcoming poll this April. People don't like a Pentagon waste, a bloated military budget, all the reports in the press and in the GAO reports. A wasteful defense is a weak defense. It takes away taxpayer money that can go to the necessities of the American people. That's off the table to Obama and Clinton and McCain. The issue of labor law reform, repealing the notorious Taft-Hartley Act that keeps workers who are now more defenseless than ever against corporate globalization from organizing to defend their interests. Cracking down on corporate crime. The media, the mainstream media, repeatedly indicating how trillions of dollars have been drained and fleeced and looted from millions of workers and investors who don't have many rights these days, and pensioners. You know, when you see the paralysis of the government, when you see Washington, D.C. be corporate-occupied territory, every department and agency controlled by overwhelming presence of corporate lobbyists, corporate executives in high government positions, turning the government against its own people, one feels an obligation, Tim, to try to open the doorways, to try to get better ballot access, to respect dissent in America in the terms of third parties and independent candidates, to recognize historically the great issues have come in our history against slavery and women's rights to vote and worker and farmer progressives through little parties that never won any national election. Dissent is the mother of assent. And in that context, I have decided to run for president.
Now, you know who that is. You know what he's saying. And everybody can take their shots at Ralph Nader. Everybody can talk about, well, what does this understand? The Ohio Democratic Party is trying to keep him off the ballot because he still owes money to whom? To somebody. He hasn't paid bills from his last campaign. And I've also read today about how Ralph Nader lays in the weeds 3.5 years at a time and then jumps up the last 6 months of a campaign and says, vote for me, vote for me, vote for me. Okay. So take all the shots that we want to take. You and I know he's not going to be president. If the election is close, which I don't think it'll be, and Ralph Nader draws off votes the way he did in the 2000 election, it would be very easy to blame him for the loss of this candidate or that candidate. Oh, Ralph Nader, he's how old is he now? 76? Doesn't sound like it, does he? They're talking about McCain. McCain's 71. Ralph Nader makes more sense in 30 seconds than John McCain makes if he stands there flapping his arms all day. But we're not going to vote for Ralph Nader, are we? No. Hell no, we're not going to vote for him. You know why? Because he's a progressive Democrat. And there is no such person running this year. Now, for all the Barack Obama supporters, if you are so inclined towards your candidate and bless you if you are. Why are you not prevailing on your candidate to adopt progressive Democratic points of view that can be found in any Ralph Nader position paper? Barack Obama is 30 years younger than Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader is an old man. And listen to his ideas. And if you're a Hillary Clinton supporter, oh, well, you know, Hillary Clinton is going to save us. It's got to be Hillary. She's got the experience. What kind of experience are you talking about? Is Hillary Clinton advocating for one single point that I just read off to you that are the points of the Nader campaign? Quick answer, no. Longer answer, hell no. Now, why is that? Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton say they're Democrats. And people out here who have the right to vote say they're Democrats. Oh, I'm a Democrat. I'm going to vote for Barack Obama. Why? Well, you know, he's inspiring and he's got hope and he's a leader and he's getting the young people. Okay. Hey, I'm a Democrat. I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Yeah, why? Well, because she's got experience and she's able to lead and she's been hammered in that crucible of she knows how to take it. She knows how to come back. Okay. What about voting for someone, if you claim you're a Democrat, for someone who talks about and pushes and advocates for and will work towards completing or bringing about all of those ideas that are the heart and soul of the Democratic Party? Nah, you're not going to do that, are you?
Protesters of corporate greed. We who have nothing, and most likely will too, we all end up locked up in jail by conservative Christian, right-wing Republican, straight white American man.
My life, I'm a lot like you were. Old man, look at my life, I'm a lot like you were.
Welcome back, 21 past the hour. Two emails here very quickly, and then we're going to take some phone calls. First one, I guess this is... I guess this is a joke. It's from Bill. Hi, Mike. I agree with you that Obama is sincere and means well, and Hillary is, well, the opposite, but I think that might change. Here's what happens to every president, Bill writes, on his first day at work since Kennedy, except for the Republicans, of course. An aide tells the president that he has to attend a very important meeting. When he gets there, the room is filled with a dozen or so people in expensive suits who tell him they want to show him a short film. He's a little puzzled, but he sits down to watch anyway. What he sees is a short film of the Kennedy assassination. The problem is, it's not the Zapruder film. The problem is, the film was taken from the grassy knoll, and it's not fuzzy at all. Oh, God. And this is from our Aurora, Illinois Bureau Chief, Marianne. I can't say the subject line, Marianne. But hello, Mike. Our good friend Nancy Skinner has ended her campaign in the Michigan 9th. I'm sure it's because she was about to be outspent in multiples by the so-called mainstream Democrat running against her. We just had a primary in the Illinois 14th, where the grassroots candidate, John Lash, was challenged by a Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee-backed millionaire. The results for the regular primary are still not finalized. Lash missed winning by less than 400 votes, and he was outspent 12-1. There are two disturbing and reinforcing trends in the Democratic Party: consolidation of power in the Democratic leadership and the massive infusion and influence of money. as we've witnessed in the Senate FISA vote, getting Democrats elected is far from enough. The leadership of the Democratic Party needs to be changed, and that won't happen with candidates that the leadership chooses to back, particularly when they favor rich self-funders. The disheartening thing to witness with John Lash and Nancy Skinner is the way progressive grassroots candidates are getting crushed by the Democratic D.C. establishment. We saw this in the Illinois 6th in 2006. Christine Sigelis had established herself as a credible candidate, getting 44% of the vote against Henry Hyde in 2004. The D.C.C.C. primaried her in 2006 with an out-of-district political neophyte named Tammy Duckworth, who narrowly defeated Sigelis, outspending her over 7-1, only to be defeated that November by the Republican. There doesn't appear to be any hope or party interest in an Illinois 6th District Democratic victory this November. I doubt that the Democratic establishment-backed candidate in place of Nancy Skinner in the Michigan 9th will do as well as she would this time around either. The sad fact is that the Democratic Party appears more interested in taking out real progressives who would threaten the leadership in sufficient numbers than in taking out Republicans. Rahm Emanuel is trying to establish what Tom DeLay had, only smarter and not so blatantly corrupt. They have the majority in the House. They only need it stronger in the Senate. So not only do we get more of the same capitulating legislation, but in raising the money bar as a determinant in a candidate's so-called viability, we have a decreasing pool of future candidates to choose from. What talented potential politician is going to put in the grindingly hard work of party building and grassroots efforts just to watch it get smashed by hordes of out-of-town hired guns when the Democratic Party determines that the district is now in play for its hand-picked favorite? Any candidate who has to outspend the other by a factor of 7, 8, 10, or more to eke out a razor-thin victory is a candidate who is fundamentally weak. The problems facing this government and the Democratic Party are problems of vision and political will. With the current Democratic leadership, we'll continue to get what we overpay for. Just frustrating and sad. Marianne, Aurora, Bureau Chief. Yeah, we found out about Nancy Skinner a couple of nights ago. We found out about Mr. Lash. So I guess the point I'm trying to make is one that most of you already know. And that is, if you're really a Democrat, if you really, really, really believe in Democratic Party principles, if they have not become fossilized and immaterial anymore and meaningless, if they're not principles from another era, if you still believe in the Democratic Party principles of coalition building and working for the betterment of the working and the middle class and having an effective and efficient but slim military and working to build America's image overseas and on and on. If you really believe that, then I just have a question for you. Why are you going to vote for Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama?
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
The bit about the grassy knoll and showing the film to the new president of the United States, of course, is part of the routine of stand-up comedian since deceased Bill Hicks. All right, let's take a look at who we got on the phone here. Oh, my goodness. Let's do some phone calls, starting with William, who is calling from Michigan. Or is this Will listening on the Internet?
Yeah, well, no, I'm listening on satellite radio.
Oh, okay. This is Will, though. I didn't recognize the William up there. Okay, it's Will. Hey, Will.
Hey. First, I want to give a shout-out to Ian's dad. He's in the VA hospital in Seattle right now.
Okay.
I don't know if he's listening, but get well soon. I wanted to talk about a show that I watched last night on TV. It was Intervention. It's an A&E series.
Yeah.
And last night they had a two-tour Iraq vet who's getting into some heavy drinking. And it's something that a lot of veterans are going through right now.
All right.
And I usually don't watch Intervention because it's you know, I think it exploits people's misery. But in this case, I think they did a good thing if they can wake people up to what the vets are going through when they come home.
All righty.
If you get a chance to see it on a DVD or a rerun of it,
Intervention.
The guy's name is Brad.
This is not a series. It's just one.
It's a series. It's a reality show where they
okay. All right.
They help addicts and their families.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Will. I appreciate it. Intervention. Bill is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Mike. What could we build with a brand new Abominator?
What could we build?
With an Abominator? Could you imagine a pair of those two would be? The old guy and the new? It would be a pretty, really cool thing.
Now, wait, you lost me. Abominator.
Obama-nator ticket.
Oh, Obama and Nader. I'm sorry.
The old and the new.
Well, that's... Yeah,
but progressively speaking, the old and the new, that's really great. Mike, I so enjoyed your visit here in Phoenix. You have no idea.
Well, thanks.
But were you quoting me when you said, I heard somebody say, we have to be the media?
No. We've been talking about that since the Air America days. But like most good, rational, political ideas, especially in times like these, many, 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 many people think the same thing. If not at the same time, certainly over a period of time. So.
I think the rest of the quote, Mike, is we have to be the media, the medium. We already have the message. Do you remember the guy with the orange, with the white shirt with the orange letters in Phoenix?
I don't think I do.
I wear a shirt, Mike, with orange letters.
Yeah.
That says Buckfush. It makes people say otherwise.
Yeah.
By acting outwards, I think it's how we free ourselves. You know, in times like this, remember in the old days when we were all really hippie and we needed that little extra dose of, yeah, it's patchouli, Mom. Remember? And it made it easy. It's got to get a little bit lighter now.
Yeah.
You know, we got to start laughing at them.
Well, I hear you, and laughter is it can be more deadly than a sword. Thanks, Bill. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas, listening on KMNY, our Dallas affiliate. Hey, Matthew.
Hi, Mike. How's it going?
It's going.
Still coming out of the magic talking box. I'm very happy.
Of what?
The magic talking box.
Box.
Which
oh,
you
yeah.
eloquently call the radio.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, I did go to the Barack Obama meet in Dallas, the one where they kind of screwed up the security. And
right.
I would like to say, first off, before I get to my main topic, that since I was the first 300 people, they did screen me. But they sat us at a weird angle to Barack, to his side, front to the side, because we were, quote, safe. So, you know, it was stupid. And actually, he's coming back here to Fort Worth, and I'm probably going to be going to see him. Now, you've just recently voiced your, I don't know if it was support for Nader or whichever, but this is more of a what would you do if question. If you were, for whatever godforsaken reason, in the Hillary Clinton camp, I just threw open my mouth a little bit, what would you be your number one advice to her? And I guess back the hell off would be a very valid thing to say. And if you were a part of Barack Obama's campaign, what would be your recommendation to him on how to deal with Hillary?
Well, Matthew, I can't think of anything that I could offer to Hillary Clinton. And I can't think of anything that I could offer to Barack Obama. Look, these two are experienced politicians way beyond anything or any level that I could get to if I had another entire lifetime to live through. And I wouldn't presume to give them any advice whatsoever. I just wouldn't. I would like to see a real Democrat run someday. I don't know if that's going to happen in my lifetime. I tend to doubt it. And that may be because the real Democratic Party, the heart of the Democratic Party, is not beating anymore. And what we have left is a party that is the shell of the old Democratic Party, but it's infested now or populated now by people, politicians, men and women, black and white, who are not really Democrats. And if that's the case, then it's time for me and people who feel the way I feel to kind of pack up our comments tent and slip off into the night and just forget about it. Tilting at windmills is not something I'm comfortable with. I think a lot of Democrats are starting to feel the same way. So that leaves us Democrats with a choice. We can just opt out of the system altogether, because no one of us is really going to start rebuilding the Democratic Party. That's just not going to happen. And that's not a question of idealism versus realism. That's a question. It's not even a question. It is a given. It is like an immutable law of physics. It's not going to happen. So we can either drop out altogether because, well, this is not my Democratic Party, or we can continue to play the game and vote, quote, Democratic, end quote, in order to keep as much of a check as possible on the fascist party in this country, the Republicans, who don't have the courage to declare themselves to be fascist, which is exactly what they are. Again, in certain countries in Europe, in certain countries around the world, the idea of fascism is not necessarily a bad one. Now, for most people with the sense God gave a sack of doorknobs, it is a bad term, but at least they identify themselves that way. There are people in this country, mostly skinheads and rednecks and jackasses and jerks, who identify themselves as fascists. The Republican Party won't do it. But that's what they are. So the choice to me is coming down rapidly to this. Well, there are certain things about Hillary Clinton I can admire. Not very many of them have to do with her political acumen or abilities, but her survivability, her resilience, her ability to take a punch and then another and then another and then another and not collapse. There are certain things about her I respect. Very few of which, if any, are political. They just have to do with what I just said, her ability to take a punch and respond. There are a lot of things about Barack Obama I respect. His courage, first and foremost, his courage to do what he's doing. But as far as either Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton being a Democrat in the sense that I've been talking about for 20 years, neither is. It's just that simple. Neither one of them is a Democrat. They are operating within the Democratic Party, but neither one is a Democrat. So again, for those of us, and I think there are a lot of us, it's just simply come down to that. We can continue to scream and rant and rave about the death of the Democratic Party, or we can shut up. Let the Democratic Party continue its process of evolution, whatever it's evolving into, and either support it or not. That's pretty much. And now, I don't mean that to sound all maudlin and morose and defeated, because it's not intended to be. Things change. Times change. Stuff moves on. I sometimes feel like I'm trapped in a time warp, and I think there's no question that that's where Ralph Nader is. But everything he says represents the heart and soul and core and spirit and morality and ethics of the Democratic Party. And he's the only one out there saying them. But, you know, so what, right?
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
10 before the hour, email from George in Alhambra, California. Mike, I just tuned in during the second hour of your program, so you may have touched on this point already. I thought one of the most important points made by Ralph Nader on Meet the Press was when he said this, quote, "If the Democrats can't landslide the Republicans this year, they ought to just wrap up, close down, and emerge in a different form," end quote. I think he is right on target, George writes. If the Democrats cannot take back the White House after 8 years of the most corrupt administration in the history of this country, then what is the real condition and message of the party? It would seem that it would be a Democratic cakewalk, but the polls indicate otherwise. George, in Alhambra. Yeah, you'd think, wouldn't you? Not just take back the White House, but to wind up with a veto-proof majority in the U.S. House and increase their hold on the Senate by maybe 7, 8, 9 seats. And if that doesn't happen, then for anyone who still has any doubts as to the corporatization of both political parties, that should kind of prove it, don't you think? If the Democrats have not presented the message to the American people that is a radical departure from what we've had for 8 years, then a few are going to get in, a few won't, maybe a few more in the House, maybe the Republicans will, or the Democrats will win the White House, maybe not. But the problem here, of course, it to me, every debate that I have heard with the Democratic candidates, when they were eight, or there were eight of them, I heard a couple of candidates who really railed against the condition of our condition in this country, Dennis Kucinich and for a while Mike Gravel. But since that time, nobody is taking a radical approach, which is what is so necessary right now. Look at what has happened to us in 8 years. I mean, it's breathtaking. You have to sit down if you really are serious about considering what has happened to this country domestically and in the area of foreign relations over the past 8 years. Every single aspect of self-governance has been destroyed by the Bush crime family. In that atmosphere, if the Democrats can't present a radical take back our country, kick these sons of bitches out kind of message, and they are not doing it, then I think it is a clear indication, like I've said earlier tonight, that the only real Democrat that is presenting a platform is the hopeless Ralph Nader. Again, I frankly don't care what you think of Ralph Nader. You know, it doesn't matter. His platform is the Democratic Party platform, the way it should be, the way it was meant to be, the way it was established when the Democratic Party was consolidating itself as the party of the people and the party of progress and the party of reality in this country. But radicals in the Democratic Party now, the few that are there, are being driven out to make room for the Rahm Emanuel Democrats. So again, you've got a clear cut choice, Truth Seeker. You can vote for the new Democrat or vote for the Republican.
Well, Kucinich was a traditional Democrat with all the right values and all the right, but he didn't have a chance of winning either.
Right.
So I just have to support the one that, you know, I think is going to get me there this time.
The one who's going to get you where?
Into the White House.
Oh.
Because Nader's not.
Okay, into the White House. For
Period.
A minute there, I thought you meant support you where you want to go, like into the heart and soul of the Democratic Party.
That'd be wonderful.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen.
No.
So your second choice is into the White House.
Yes.
Okay.
Because that's more important to me than voting on principle for someone that might move me an inch closer to McCain.
Okay. Will this marriage succeed?
So we'll just go to the voting booth and cancel each other out.
Well, no, that's not necessarily true. I've already made my decision. I, once again, am going to take the cat of nine tails with me so that after I cast my vote for the Democratic nominee, I can flail and beat myself in the pickup truck on the way back from that Baptist church we go to vote in. We're not going to cancel each other's vote. Not at all. I'm not going to. In the first place, Ralph Nader's name is not going to be on the ballot here in Georgia. It's not going to happen.
That's a blessing.
Why is it a blessing?
Well, as much as I support democracy, I really am afraid of insane John McCain and 100 years war in Iraq. So I'm.
Do you think Hillary Clinton is going to give us, what, 90 years war in Iraq?
I don't like her either.
What do you think Barack Obama is going to do?
Hopefully better than the other two. I know what Ralph Nader can't do, and he can't win an election.
Should we start some marriage counseling?
Again?
Couples counseling. Should we get back into it?
If Carville and Matlin can make it work, we can certainly come together on this.
Well, I certainly respect your decision to do whatever you like in the voting booth or anywhere for that matter. I mean, you are, after all, she who must be obeyed or at least listened to. Well, all right, at least respected. But
I love Ralph Nader. If it weren't for Ralph Nader, you know, we'd all be driving around in cars with dashboard hibachis and optional front seat hammocks. But I just don't think he can take the White House.
Well, I don't either. And I have not even presumed to suggest such a thing. America could not handle voting for Ralph Nader or someone Ralph Nader Jr., Dennis Kucinich. Not going to happen. And that is because the Democratic Party in the United States is dead. What has taken its place is a corporate Democratic Party that is... All right, we'll be back. I can't. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us, please. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program on the Nova M Radio Network. Let's go back to your phone calls. Tony is calling from Torrance, California, listening on the Internet. Tony, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Oh, good. I was just calling. This is Tony. Remember me? I'm an old caller from Chicago.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. You know, I just wanted to say that, though I am a Barack Obama supporter, of course, in Chicago and all, but I think America right now is kind of like what you were saying earlier about people are just going to have to come to grips with who they are and what they're about. And as far as black people, to me, America's finally having a black experience. You know, white folks. Anyway, yeah. You know, and like you said, the old with the root lady in the hood. See,
right,
we've been dealing ever since we got here. The first person to die in the American Revolution was a black man, Chris Kasatics.
Yes, he was.
Right. You got to look at brothers coming back from the wars getting lynched in their uniforms. Mm. I mean, if there's anybody here that has given 100% and always had to go to the back of the bus, it was us.
Sure.
So I think what is going on in the Democratic Party, one, people are finding how full of BS it is in the first place, you know, as far as the superdelegates, da-da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. Nobody, you know, everybody's now finding out how stuff is being run, and that, which is good, you know. And people are going to have to really face what everything is coming to and then do what you got to do, just like what your wife said, you know. What we have done all this time is keep pushing forward. You know, if you get caught up right in the moment and it looks hopeless, I mean, think about the people that were slaves, my ancestors that were slaves, and a man, black man, is running for president. Do you think they could have ever imagined that?
No.
But what they did, though, was they kept pushing forward and looking forward. African thought says there are three things exist at the same time: the past, the present, and the future.
Mm-hmm.
That was all at once. You know what I mean? And so by keeping that in mind, you know, we're the present, but we are only here because of our ancestors, right? And yep. Then, like your daughter Molly, that's the future.
That's right.
You know what I mean? So if you believe in that and keep that in your mind and constantly prepare yourself to be the ancestors to the people to come, that's what keeps you going. And see, that's how we've been able to survive this thing and move forward. You know, and the bottom line is, everybody has to be their own damn leader.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't keep waiting on the Messiah and looking for, you know, somebody. You got to represent yourself, and you also got to understand who your enemy is and where you got to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I do. No, you make absolute sense, Tony.
Yep, that's where we at. So all I can say is to people, just trust in yourself, trust in understanding what kind of belly of the beast you really living in, and understand who that is, but then do what you have to do. Do what you were put here to do. And then that's why everything, the universe is going to balance itself out anyway.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Tony.
All right.
You take care. Have a good evening. I'm all inspired now. She's absolutely right. You know, I said, I think last week, I would get around to telling you why I'm going to vote for Barack Obama. And a part of the reason, not the reason, I'm looking for someone to lead this country. I'm looking for a political leader. I'm not looking for, like Tony said, I'm not looking for the Messiah. I'm not looking for somebody who's going to solve all the problems. I'm looking for someone who can most effectively lead the country. And in the case of the next president, undo the damage that this thuggish regime has done to us all, this Bush crime family. But there's another reason. And the other reason is also ties into what Tony just said. You know, I feel like I've been around for quite some time. I was in high school when Emmett Till was butchered in the South. And I was living in the North. And I remember, I've said before, I grew up in a fully integrated neighborhood, a fully integrated school, yada, 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 always have. It was just part of the way I was brought up. And I can remember, I didn't quite get the impact of it, but I remember the black kids, maybe it wasn't high school, maybe it was elementary school, but I remember the black kids in my classes just there's something happened to them. You know, they when that story, the news reported it in the North,
they were shocked. They were horrified. They were scared. They were freaked out. I don't remember anyone getting mad and saying, let's go down to, was it Mississippi where Emmett Till was killed? Let's go down there and murder white people. I don't remember that. I just remember a difference in the demeanor and the attitude of the kids. And I remember that. I remember that. And that kind of started my racial consciousness, aside from the fact that, you know, I mean, come on, I could tell the difference between what white people and black people, but racial consciousness, you know, that or I should say racist consciousness. It was like, oh, my God. Over the course of my life, yeah, I've seen all kinds of changes in the black attitudes and white attitudes. I've seen a lot of resistance to the change, but I've seen the change come anyway. It's what Tony's been talking about. You just move ahead. You don't give up. You keep moving ahead. I deal with my basic taught racism every single day. I admit it. I don't try to hide from it. Don't try to deny it. But what I have... one of the reasons I am probably going to vote, or not probably, I will vote for Barack Obama if he is. I voted for him in the primary here in Georgia, and we'll vote for him if he's the candidate, is because he represents something very important to me, and that is the possibility, and I never thought that I would see it in my lifetime, the possibility that a bridge can be built over all this racist crap that has eaten a hole into the soul of this country. And I mean that. I just mean it. I mean, you know, you snigger, laugh, send me sarcastic, snotty emails like I had a woman do the other night. You know, I frankly don't give a damn. I'm talking about my trip. I'm talking about my personal trip. That's all. Over the course of my life. And Barack Obama represents something to me that is just fundamentally right. And that is that... You know, if here's the thing. If Barack Obama were to become president, aside from, let's set aside, is he going to be a good president, a bad president? Is he going to be impeached? Is he going to do this? Set all that aside. All of a sudden, that stuff that I used to hear, that sentence I used to hear as a kid, now is true. Any person in this country can grow up and become president. Now, I used to hear that when I was a little white kid. And I had little black friends, and we all used to hear that. And there was kind of an understanding between the white kids and the black kids. Well, I can remember going to Sunday school and singing that song, Red and Yellow, Black and White, God will keep them in His sight, knowing that that was a damn lie. That was a damn lie the way it was practiced out, you know, outside the church. That as soon as we walked outside the church, it was back to the same old racist crap. And probably one of the people leading the racist crap would be the preacher, because I told you before, you know, the church I went to with my grandmother was a Baptist church, but it was part of Southern Baptist Convention, and the whole Southern Baptist Convention was put together to keep the black folk out. So even though they sang that song, I knew what was going on. So the Obama candidacy, just the fact that he's come this far, I'm not talking about Al Sharpton, I'm not talking about Jesse Jackson, I'm talking about this guy. A young, a forceful, actual, real, honest-to-God candidate for president of the United States who happens to have a white mother and a black father. And to see this happen in my lifetime, if I were a praying man, if I had any belief at all in a higher power, I would be on my knees every night hoping and praying that no thug, no punk, tries to interfere with what's going on here, with the fact that this man has a very good chance of becoming president of the United States. But Barack Obama represents to me, and again, this has nothing to do with how good or bad of a president he would be. The fact that he's come this far and the fact that he may be the next president of the United States is something key to me. That is so important. It almost brings tears to my eyes if I stop and think about it, because I, you know, like anybody my age, I've seen an awful lot in the way, only way that a Caucasian can. I've felt some of that pain out there that black folk have gone through. So that's what Barack Obama's candidacy means to me.
Come together. Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
It is 21 past the hour. I hope Barack Obama can withstand the attacks he's going to get from once the Democratic Party's nominee has been determined. I don't think the Clinton camp is going to do anything but support him when that time comes, if that time comes. But let's assume that Barack Obama is going to be the nominee. I wonder if he can withstand what this filthy, disgusting Republican Party is going to toss at him. We mentioned it earlier this evening. There was a rally for McCain in was it Cincinnati today? And one of the introducers was someone who's identified as a conservative radio talk show host, Bill Cunningham. Now, I'm not trying to be a smartass here, but I've never heard of this guy. When I saw the video of what he said, I have to say, and this is one of my ad hominem attacks, he's an ugly bastard with probably the worst hair dye job of any old guy that I think I've ever seen. And those baggy trousers, good God in heaven. Don't people in Cincinnati know how to dress? I'm sure you do, but this guy didn't. But he repeatedly referred to Senator Barack Obama as Barack Hussein Obama. The three or four times he said that. And that is a deliberate slam. And you know, a lot of people go say, well, that's his middle name, Mike. And to those people, I just raise my middle finger and say, go away. Go do something else. Get out of my face. Get out of here. Barack Hussein Obama. Yeah. Now, on Hannity's America, which is a sewage drainage ditch for Fox television, Bill Cunningham repeatedly called Barack Obama, Barack Hussein Obama, again, and discussing the Democratic presidential primaries, this Cincinnati talk show freak asserted, quote, I've had a couple of individuals tell me that after the so-called, quote, white voters, end quote, in Iowa, New Hampshire weighed in heavily, especially in Iowa, for Barack Hussein Obama, and then in New Hampshire, Hillary kind of made a little bit of a comeback. There has been a conscious effort by Bubba Bill Clinton to smear and to slime Barack Hussein Obama on the race issue. And he goes on. Cunningham repeatedly called Senator Barack Obama on Cunningham's radio program Barack Mohammed Hussein Obama. Cunningham also said that Obama was raised in madrasas in Indonesia. He also said Obama's church was a group of people who believed in black separatism, and they were black racists. Now, it's this kind of scum and filth that just sloshes around inside the borders of America and that vast oral toilet that is right-wing talk radio. This is the kind of stuff that just sloshes around, and it's on border to border, coast to coast, 24/7, on hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of radio stations. And this is the concern I have. Some piece of human waste like this Cunningham is going to inspire somebody to try to harm Barack Obama. And Cunningham knows that.
And this would be, you know, his at night when he goes to bed and plays with himself, if something does happen to Barack Obama, he will lay there in bed in the darkness and try to take credit for it. This is the sort of situation that has me upset. America, that's, you know, I know the Bill Cunninghams of this country. That's the reason 20-some years ago I got a permit to carry a gun, because these sons of bitches threaten. They're subhumans. They're capable of anything. They're capable of inspiring other people to commit criminal acts. Now, McCain, and I said this earlier tonight, and I got a couple of emails said, don't credit McCain. McCain knew exactly what was going on. I don't believe that. McCain said that he was shocked. And if you look at the video when McCain comes off the stage, I don't know what they're talking about, but his campaign advisor is whispering in his ear, telling him, look, you know, this guy really said some heavy-duty stuff. And McCain came out and said that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are both worthy candidate or opponents, whatever he said, and that his campaign would not resort to this. So, you know, you pay your money and you make your choice on who's telling the truth on this. But this piece of waste, this Bill Cunningham, there are so many like him that slosh around inside the toilet of right-wing talk radio all day long. And this is the thing that kind of worries me about the Barack Obama candidacy. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Andrew is calling from Milwaukee, listening on Sirius. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Thanks for taking my call. As far as that photo is concerned, as far as Barack, I mean, if Hillary goes over to China, does she not wear the gown over there? I mean, why was that made such an issue? Now, another issue I'd like to hit on as far as...
Well, wait, let me answer that one.
Okay,
It was made such an issue because there has been a concentrated effort in this country predating the 9/11 attack on this country to demonize Muslims.
Right.
You can go back 20, 30, 40 years, and the Muslims were the crazy people. They were the crazy people, the terrorists, the bomb throwers, the ones who wouldn't behave themselves in the occupied territories of Palestine, yada, yada, yada. So, the average American is just dumb as dog droppings. So when you see a picture, not you, but when a picture like that one of Obama is put out there, by whoever put it out, by right-wingers, by the Clinton campaign, by a combination, doesn't matter, I don't care. When that picture's put out there, the average American, being the dumbass that he or she is, will look at that picture and not have any idea what it is. It just looks like, oh, he's a Muslim, rather than taking a second and finding out what it is. It's tribal dress. It's what Bedouins wear. It's what certain members of a tribe wears to indicate, you know, respect me. I'm an old man. This is what I put on. But Americans are stupid. So that's why that picture is much more inflammatory than a picture of Hillary Clinton dressing up in Chinese garb, or what's his name, George Bush, when he was recently doing his little Africa walkabout, when he put on African garb. Nobody cares. But Barack, Barack Obama, because it has something to do with those Muslims. It has something to do, and again, the average American doesn't have a clue. Nobody knows what that dress means until somebody explains it to him. By then, it's too late. So that's the answer to that question.
Correct. And let me just with all that being said, I mean, let's think about Columbus when he fled to North America. What was one of his reasons? Freedom of religion without prosecution.
I don't know that Columbus was that way. I think that's what the Puritans were about. But Columbus was all about getting gold and slaves and treasure and spices and finding a way to the Orient, you know, to China. Because, you know, Marco Polo had made that trip, and it took Marco Polo, 12 years to make the trip, 14 years, and Columbus was after something else. I don't think it was about religion, man. I really don't, Andrew.
One of our constitutional rights is freedom of religion. Every religion has its extremists.
Yeah.
Whether
absolutely.
It be Catholic, Baptist, Christians, no matter what.
That's right.
So, I mean, that's my point. All right. Thanks for taking my call.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. I appreciate it. Because, you know, I completely agree with that. I do not like religion. I am not a believer. You know, somebody said to me, well, what, you don't have any spiritual core? I don't know if I have a spiritual core or not. I don't believe in God, and I don't believe this religious crap. Any of it, on any level. But that's, you know, y'all are tired of hearing that. Sanchez is calling from Montebello, California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Sanchez.
A very pleasant good evening to you from the West Coast, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Sanchez.
I'm currently in the Nova M chat room right now, and there's a wild discussion going on about your appearance on Saturday night in Phoenix with Scott Ritter and Jeff Arias.
Are they saying good things?
Yes, they are. Is there going to be audio available to Nova M podcasters?
I don't know. I think there was an effort made to record, but I'll tell you what happened. The venue where we had this event provided the sound, and it sucked.
Mm.
So I'm not sure how the sound turned out. I think some of our people recorded it independently of the venue. So I'm just not sure. If it's available, Ian and Billy will make sure it's out there.
Well, the thing that I want to hear is the thing that I just found out about here. They were telling me that you guys got up on stage and did an old soft shoot number, all of the Rat Pack. I'm very curious to hear what song you guys did.
What?
I'm joking with you, man.
Oh, okay.
I could see you on stage doing a soft shoe number.
Yeah, no, you can't. No, you can't.
Oh, man, I know. Hey, you were discussing Nader earlier on, and I have very mixed feelings about it, as I'm sure you do. And I respect the man. I fully respect the man for what he is saying. You know, Nader is a relic. Just like, for example, if for some strange reason I could jump into a time machine and go back and bring Robert Kennedy back from the past and put him in today's politics, he would be a relic. He would be minimized. The Democratic Party is no longer as we saw it before. And I'm really, really concerned about one thing that Kathy said. It was about a half hour ago you were having your little conversation. Mm-hmm. She's supporting Obama, and she said, hopefully the things that Obama will be able to take care of, and that's how I'm feeling. Hopefully. I don't feel very confident about it, but at the same time, like the sheeple, we're all getting corralled into one corral. I didn't support him. My original choice was Kucinich, and then from there we had to drop down to Edwards, and now we're dropping down. Sure, I support him. I've announced it on several programs, but this is the problem with the Democratic Party. And the issue that I have with Hillary Clinton goes back to just this past weekend. And I was just telling the members in the chat room this very thing. If she can't see bad advice from good advice, the advice that her handlers are giving her, then how the hell is she going to be able to tell good intelligence from bad intelligence? How is she going to be able to tell a good bill from a bad bill? You know, there's something to do with her own personal judgment here that's getting her in trouble. And I can see through that. I don't like the fact that she's telling me, oh, I have wonderful experience. No. Those things do not impress me. She's insulting my personal intelligence. You know me, Mike. I'm going to bring something up here that we discussed about a year ago. Remember, we were having a conversation about the Democrats. They behave like the Washington Generals in the Harlem Globetrotters basketball
right.
game.
Right.
And I mentioned if Kucinich at that point, along with Barbara Lee, Maxine Waters, and Cynthia McKinney Paul Hackett and Ralph Nader, if these people all broke off and started a progressive Democratic Party or any progressive independent party after the elections, I would be there in a heartbeat. I would be there in a second, Mike. I just think because the mindset right now, I've been hearing it all, especially the hosts of the so-called progressive talk shows. One said that he would rather, one in the morning, that's all I'll say, if you want to go listen to podcasts, you can do this. One this morning was saying he would rather vote for Ron Paul than vote for Nader. And that betrays all of our democratic values for him to say something like that.
Well, I don't know who said that, and don't give me any clues because I don't want to know. But
okay.
But that is somebody who is who doesn't know what the hell he's saying. And in the big picture, if he himself feels that way, fine, go for it.
Yeah.
But I think what it displays is a total misunderstanding or a lack of understanding about both Ralph Nader and Ron Paul. Nader has as much chance of being president as I am. As a matter of fact, I may get more votes than he does. God only knows how many ballots or how many state tickets he's going to make it onto.
I know.
But the point I was trying to make, yeah, Nader's day came and gone, came and went 45 years ago. If he would have gotten into presidential politics, you know, back in the 60s maybe, or early 70s, in a real way, maybe something happened. But the point I was trying to make was that Nader is the only candidate out there making a strong stand on Democratic Party principles.
Correct.
Probably even more so than Dennis Kucinich did.
Mm-hmm.
So if and he's, you know, he's but he's become a cartoon figure.
I know.
And he's become a cartoon figure by his own, I mean, by his own doing. It's not that people have pushed him into being a cartoon character. He's done it to himself. But aside from that, he still is the only person out there who represents Democratic Party principles and ideals and the very soul of that party.
Yeah.
And it's gone now. There is not a candidate. Barack Obama nor Hillary Clinton will come within 1,000 miles of the positions that Ralph Nader would take.
Mm-hmm.
And that pretty much explains their relationship to the Democratic Party.
Right.
It's pretty much in name only.
Yeah.
Given a choice between a Democratic candidate and a Republican candidate, I have no doubt which way I'll vote.
Of course.
I have no doubt at all. But these are not Democrats.
Uh-huh.
That's all. And that was my point. I got to leave there. Sanchez, thanks, man.
Have a good night. Thanks.
All right. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. Time for a break. It is time for a break. We'll be back in a second. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Before the hour, thanks to the Malloy Show crew, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Chris in Minnesota, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, our executive producers, Catherine Bay. Thanks to everybody. Edie is calling from Montgomery, Alabama. Edie, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Hey, Edie. How you doing?
How are you doing, dear?
I'm all right.
Well, me too. I was in, you know, spasms watching the debate, and Hillary said something about her health care program that I thought was a jaw-dropper.
Oh,
nobody
yeah?
else seemed to be noticing it. But she was defending it, and, of course, it is a mandated thing that she's talking about. Those that can't afford it have to buy it, you know, like car insurance. But the people that can't afford to buy it, like me, for instance, well, we'll be taken care of in the emergency room. How is that any different?
It isn't. It's pretty much the same as anything a Republican could come up with. This health care plan that the Clinton campaign is talking about is this unholy alliance between the Clinton campaign and the medical industrial complex. It's a joke. It's a joke on everybody in this country. None of these Democratic candidates, including Senator Obama, has the courage to just stand there and say, look, here's what we're going to do. It's going to be single-payer health care. They won't do it. They'll never do it. We need a different kind of Democrat to get that done. But Hillary's plan is especially egregious to me because all it will do is make the insurance industry even richer.
Yep, I agree. And just one more thing I'd like to say, Mike. Anyone who wants to write a letter giving moral support to our imprisoned governor, they can find his mailing address at Jeff Ferries' website.
Okay, and you're talking about Don Siegelman. That's
yes,
a good idea. People should go to NovaMradio.com, go to KPHX.
Or you can go to JeffFerries.com.
Oh, JeffFerries.com? Okay.
Yeah, it's there.
Okay, good. And send a card to Governor Siegelman. Thank you, Edie. Appreciate you checking in.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Stephen is calling from Burbank, California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Stephen.
Yeah, hi, Mike. I'm telling you, Sanchez is a tough act to follow. But what's happening is I call to say that with Democrats, there's no guarantee that things will get better. But with Republicans, it's guaranteed things always get worse. And the
that's very true.
I mean, it's so nuts. I mean, you know, there was Nixon, and then I remember Reagan, and my shirt-tail uncle and I are standing around saying, gee, this guy makes Nixon look good, you know?
Yeah,
then
for
Bush
sure.
1, this guy makes Reagan look good. And then the kid, you know, this guy makes Bush 1 look good. It's insane.
It is indeed.
You know, but there is a Democrat, and I heard you talking about it, and I was at a rally once, and I held up the banner all night, and somebody asked him if he'd split off and run on his own, and he says, no, I'm not going to do it because I'm a Democrat. And that is the only man ever in my whole life that I've ever given money to for campaigning. I gave money for campaigning for president, and now I'm sending him money to get a seat back in Ohio. And that man is Dennis Kucinich, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Kucinich, when instant runoff voting came to our club, Burbank Democratic Club, you know, the ballot was, for me, it was Kucinich, Edwards, and Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And then hearing you talking on the phone while I was waiting to talk to you, now I can understand why Kucinich, you know, gave us, you know, threw his support to Obama.
Yeah, and you make a good point about Kucinich. He's about to be McKinney'd. You know, Cynthia McKinney'd. He is targeted.
I know that.
By the corporate Democrats, and I think people should go to his website, which I think is Kucinich.us.
I've done that more than once.
And help out because the Democratic Party establishment hates Dennis Kucinich. He had the temerity to try to introduce articles of impeachment, and even said he was going to do it on the day of the State of the Union address, and they brought the hammer down on him. So this is why I hate and am disgusted with the Democratic Party. This is what they do. I almost hate them as much as I hate Republicans, but not quite, because I do think that the Democratic Party is redeemable. Like you said, things always get worse with Republicans. They might get better with Democrats, although I'm starting to lose faith in that, too. But it's not Republicans who are trying to destroy Dennis Kucinich. It is the Democratic Party establishment personified by people like Rahm Emanuel.
DLC. Well, when I get solicitations from DNC and DCCC, you know, I just write a little note. I wouldn't give you this money, but Kucinich got it. I would have given you this money, but Rick Jacobs from Courage Campaign got it. I would have sent you this $40, you know, but Move On got it, and the ACLU, you know.
Good for you.
And that's what I'm telling them, you know. And they sent me a little thing, you know. What is your view on the war on terror? You know, and I said, who told you that, and why should I believe it? You know, I mean, I write things as Republicans, you know. I mean, I was registered as a Republican because I thought David Duke was going to be on the ballot in California. And I never bothered to go back, but the only reason I switched back to registered Democrat so I could join the Burbank Democratic Club and become an activist.
Why did you wanted to vote for David Duke?
No! I was voting against him. Look at what the polls are, you know. And whoever was creeping up on him, I voted for him just to get David Duke out of there. I also got a thing from Haley Barber. Thank you for your support. I never sent him one single dime, not one penny.
Haley Barber belongs in prison. That is his natural home, is in prison. Stephen, I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot, pal. I appreciate it. Oh, my goodness, Marge is on hold, and I'm not going to get to her. Well, maybe tomorrow night, Marge. Thanks to everybody for participating tonight. However you did that, I do appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.